Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Buckeye Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome to Buckeye Talk. I'm Nathan Baird from Cleveland.com, along with my colleague Andrew Gillis. Stephen Means not with us today, but we were at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center on Thursday talking to a host of Ohio State tight ends and defensive linemen. A lot of guys who are, a couple veterans, G. Scott was in there, but mostly like guys who are second and third year guys and guys who are either on the rise or are trying to carve out that niche where they can help this team in a number of ways by the time we get to this fall. And we'll start with the tight ends, Andrew, because this was our first chance to catch up with Bennett Christian, and a guy who came in the 2022 class as sort of the next in line of succession for the tight end room. And obviously things went a little bit sideways for him last year. Ryan Day announced going into the season last year that he was going to be suspended. It was an NCAA suspension related to testing positive for a banned substance. Not a drug of abuse, as they would say, but a something from a supplement or a substance that is not allowed under performance enhancing rules. It sounded like it was mistakenly taken, but he owned up to the mistake, and the biggest repercussion was he had to sit out all of last year. Still got to practice, still got to develop behind the scenes, but couldn't play in games. So I guess just for starters, how did Bennett Christian describe how that happened, why it happened, and how he responded to that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really unique process, because one of the things that, one of the things that you think about whenever a guy gets suspended is, what did he do? What did he do wrong? And the way that he kind of described it was that he went to a nutrition store and got something that you or I could go get, like today, and it would be no problem, and we could just go get that. So it sounded, like you said, it sounded to be, pretty harmless, and there wasn't, this wasn't the baseball steroid scandal or anything like that going on. It sounded pretty, pretty innocuous when he was kind of describing this process, but he found out about it last winter. So Ryan Day came out in fall camp, and I believe it was like right at the end of like maybe first or second press conference that he did for fall camp. And he's like, oh, by the way, Bennett Christian's out. And I remember it was pretty early in that time frame. And so Bennett had been practicing with the team. He found out, he said, just before spring practice last year. So he had to go through spring practice, through the summer, and then get into fall camp. And he knew that the 2023 season was a wash for him. He knew that he was going to be suspended. And when things like that happen, there's not an appeal process. There is not a board of appeals or anything like that you can go through. It's a suspension. You're suspended for a year. And he just kind of had to live with that. And he said, look, it took me a little while. He said it took him, some time to try and get back to it, because that's a hard thing to go through. I get it. I get it from his perspective and, why you would maybe take a little bit of time. But, he said it's in the past, it's behind me. I was devastated, but I'm past it now. And I want to, you know, I want to get better. And he said he tried to get better every day. One of the things that he was doing was practicing with the scout team, where every day he's blocking Jack Sawyer and JT Tumalolo. So in terms of development, there's probably a worse, you know, trajectory to have than going up against two dudes who are going to play in the NFL. And frankly, if you want to be honest, he probably wasn't going to play a whole heck of a lot in game last year anyway. So I think the development side of things, you could actually make a case it's not going to be that big of a hit for him. But yeah, it was tough. And I mean, he seemed ready to get back, and he seemed pretty eager to kind of make an impact in this room because, I mean, as we've talked about before, the tight end depth chart kind of pretty wide open.
You do feel for the guy, even if it's an easy rule not to break. It's also potentially easy to break it on accident. And for someone like him, when you're having that happen 2-3 years into your career, it's, you've already taken your red shirt and you can't get these back. Like, you don't have that many years. You got 4 years to play in a 5-year span. Maybe there's some wiggle room based on, you know, injury hardships and things like that, but it's, you lose something here. And like you said, I don't think he was going to be a big part of the offense, certainly last year. They just had too many other guys, Cade Stover and G. Scott and Joe Royer and any number of other guys ahead of him in that list, but could have played. Maybe you get a special teams role. Maybe you're in on some of the kicking units. Like, there's other ways that you could be involved, and instead you're sort of just sidelined completely, and you're healthy, but you just have to watch. And I think that it mentally can be a tough thing for guys to go through, but it does sound like he from the beginning has handled this in a pretty stand-up way. And I think now the question is, now that you don't have Cade Stover in that group anymore, now that you don't have Joe Royer in that group anymore, what's the potential for Bennett Christian in the coming year? Is there a way that he can help this team?
I think so. You know, one of the things that he said was that he was going to be prepared to play a role that whatever they ask of him, he'll do. What else is he supposed to say? But you know, one of the things I thought was interesting was, you know, he mentioned that he thinks he and Will Kaczmarek are pretty similar players. You know, the Ohio transfer that they brought in at tight end, you know, a guy that they brought in and is a really good blocker and has kind of proven that he can be a really good blocker. So this tight end room has six players in it. For all intents and purposes, it has four that we really need to kind of focus on, because Max LeBlanc and Demarion Witten are the two freshmen that are incoming. They're not even on campus yet. So not only are they playing a developmental position that is going to be, you know, pretty hard to just take by the reins and see time, you're also not coming until June. So it's going to take a minute for these guys to get acclimated to everything. So that leaves you with G. Scott, Will Kaczmarek, Bennett Christian, and Jelani Thurman. And I think Christian can kind of carve out this role of a blocking type of player because, you know, we'll get to G. Scott here in a minute, but one of the things G was talking about was his receiving ability. And, you know, now you have Kaczmarek and Christian. I mean, this offense might need some blocking tight ends. And I think that might be where Christian can find a role. You know, I mentioned when we did one of our videos that trust, I think, is the biggest word for tight ends this year. You know, the Ohio State, Ryan Day, Chip Kelly, Will Howard, like, they need to be able to trust the tight ends, especially as you're putting so many new guys into prominent roles. And I think if you can prove that you can just do your job, you know, the old Patriots saying, do your job, you can get blocks done, you can make catches in short space, I think Bennett Christian can carve himself a nice little role, you know, maybe not as a, you know, a Cade Stover type of tight end, but certainly as a tight end that you feel really good about as a two or a three.
They need three. They need three guys, because even if it's just on occasion, they're going to put three guys in those goal line packages, somebody working as that sort of fullbacky thing. And that doesn't always come from the tight end room. You know, Caden Curry did some of those things last season. He was asked about that today and sort of said, well, we'll see. You know, it's a new guy running the offense now. So that maybe remains to be seen. Caden McDonald got on the field in some ways last year. So they'll be creative beyond that. But I think if they can find three tight ends who can do it and give them maybe the ultimate, you know, flexibility with those three tight ends, then I think that's maybe the ideal look that they're trying to get there. One guy who we did see last year was Jelani Thurman. And I'm just curious what we've heard this week between the tight ends talking themselves, between Keenan Bailey on Tuesday. I mean, immediately he's one of the first things that any tight end on this roster gets asked about. Sometimes even before they get asked about themselves, is like, what are you seeing from Thurman? Where are things going with Thurman? Like, what's your impression of where things stand with Jelani Thurman here in spring of 2024?
Yeah, I think it's still a little bit early. I think this is going to be a massive summer for Jelani Thurman, because obviously, you know, the spring you want to assert yourself, you want to get into a role, but I mean, he's got the size and physicality and the speed. You know, he told us today that he weighs, you know, anywhere from like 258 to 260. But I think this is going to be a really, really big summer for him in terms of continuing to grow physically, in terms of continuing to, you know, to get better at kind of everything he does. And, you know, that's one of the things that he mentioned that was really hard for him when he got here was, you know, the technique, and he learned about leverage and blocking. And that was something that I thought was pretty interesting, because when you're that big, I mean, he's like, well, I think like 6'6", 6'7". Like when you're that big as a player, it's really hard to get on the edge and block dudes who are going to play in the NFL that, you know, have been playing defensive line for years, and they've kind of seen all the tips and tricks, and you're just learning how to block. You're just learning technique. You're just learning leverage. He mentioned he didn't do that a lot in high school. So I think strength is going to be a big thing for him. You know, you got to be able to hold up at the point of attack in pass blocking and run blocking. You know, that's going to be a really big deal for him. So I think where things stand right now would probably, like, the word would be promising. You feel, I think with Thurman, it's promising where you're at with him and kind of what the, you know, what the next couple of weeks and frankly, a couple of months can be with him.
That size. I mean, you said, as you said, 6'6", and he was quoting himself around 258. G. Scott Jr., when he walked up to the podium today, I was again struck by him. And like, man, you do not look like you look like when you got here. Because obviously he came as a receiver. But he said that he's more around 245. I think they list him at 243. Yeah. So like just that gives you – and he's – I think he's like 6'3", maybe-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, just that gives you some indication of the just – crazy size that you're dealing with Jelani Thurman. Did he talk about like what he sees as like the, maybe the, his most essential areas of growth? Like, is this a matter of, is the blocking not there yet? Are there still just some of those finer points that he needs to iron out?
No, he was pretty diplomatic about it. You know, he did mention that the blocking was something, you know, that he thinks he's taken a big step at, but what, you know, has been really hard. I think he got asked directly, you know, like, what do you think you can give to this offense? And his answer was versatility. You know, he says he's gotten better at blocking. We're going to have to see. Again, I think this is one of those things where, you know, Saturday scrimmage could be pretty enlightening for us. I think fall camp could be pretty enlightening for us. Kind of how he's evolved as a blocker, how he's gotten better as a blocker. So you want to see that. And then we know the receiving ability, right? I mean, when you're that big and that you have that big of a catch radius, that's a huge deal. So, you know, to me, I think there wasn't any area that he was like, this is where I've, you know, slamming the table. This is where I've gotten better at. This is what I'm great at now. You know, he said that he's gotten better at a lot of different things, but the blocking has really, taken a step forward. And then, you know, the receiving ability, I think, is always kind of something that he knows he's pretty good at and he feels pretty confident in.
Trying to project like what I think the 2024 season could look like for him, because I don't think it's going to be a Cade Stover season by any means. I don't see him catching 30, 40 balls this fall. It's just not probably where he is, nor is it where his usage would fall, or maybe any tight end's usage would fall in this offense this year. But it seems like a guy who could have like 15 catches, but they could be like, some of those could be like massive catches. Like this is a goal line weapon. When you're 6'6"-ish, like pushing beyond that and that kind of size, plus how athletic you are, it's pretty easy to see how a team can use that, you know, in the back of the end zone and just making him a true goal line weapon. And Ohio State did that, I thought, tremendously, especially when it had Jeremy Ruckert and other guys, you know, playing off of each other. And to see that get used in combination with Jelani Thurman, I think, would be really interesting. Plus, all those times where Cade Stover was sort of a check down and would pick up a lot of yards out of that, like, I think we can all project what we think it looks like if a team forgets to cover Jelani Thurman and the starting quarterback, whoever it is, dumps off to him. And now he's got, you know, 8 to 10 yards to get rumbling. And then what happens? Like, who's taking him down in a standard secondary once he's got a head of steam behind him? I think it could be pretty fun, even if it is a pretty limited number of actual receptions that he finishes with this year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, Emeka Buka was the team's number two receiver. I mean, he had the same number of catches as Cade Stover, you know, but, and he actually did have less yards, but I mean, come on, he missed a handful of games during the course of that time. That 41 catches for 515 is not exactly indicative of what he is. I'm curious, like, I don't know if you're going to get a tight end that gets to 41, but, you know, kind of like we said about, you know, the, we mentioned this on a previous pod about kind of like replacing Cade in the aggregate. Like, I wonder if G. Scott and Jelani Thurman can get you, you know, Cade Stover had 5 touchdowns. Like, I wonder if they can get you, you know, 45 catches for 600 yards and 5 or 6 touchdowns. Like, I wonder if together that can be the accumulation of what those two guys could bring. And then maybe there's a Kazmarek, you know, couple of catches in here, Bennett Christian, couple of catches in here. But I'm curious if that is where Ohio State can get maybe the tight end production that you're losing with Cade Stover.
I think it's possible. I think some of the, as we try to project tight end usage, it's difficult because they don't ever have to use that as a primary weapon in the offense. Like, Cade Stover had sort of developed into that. He and CJ Stroud had really developed a connection as more than just football players. And I thought that bled onto the field a little bit. And that was what sort of fueled that 2022 breakout that Stover had. So will something like that develop between Will Howard or Devin Brown or Julian Sand or whoever's quarterbacking for this team this year and be something that, explodes onto the field? Maybe. I think it's also possible, though, that it becomes a little bit, as it relates to the receiving duties specifically, becomes a little bit more back to like a utility role, utility position, where it really emphasizes the blocking and the receiving becomes even more of a secondary consideration than it has. But the talent is here from a couple of these guys that might not be the case. And I think G. Scott Jr. is the best, has the most upside for 2024 as far as being a big part of the receiving game. You know, we saw it in flashes. He had the big touchdown catch in the game that Cade Stover missed. Was that the Rutgers game? I should have looked it up.
I believe it was, yes. But
I think it was at Rutgers. Had a nice touchdown catch. And
right in the corner of the end zone, yep.
Yeah, right, yeah, front. And, like, you know what it – you've seen him do it. I mean, he's been doing that stuff since before he was a tight end. And he was – you can tell today he was getting a little frustrated with still getting the questions of, when did it feel like you were really a tight end? Because – I think he's been getting that question ever since he actually moved over to that room. And today he finally was like, listen, I don't know what to tell you guys. Like, once they moved me into the room, I was a tight end. Like, that's where it was. But I think he may also understand what people are trying to get at is it's not so much where did his mindset shift, but it's like, when did you feel like you had turned the corner in all the developmental things that have to go into being a tight end? And he was also, you know, admitting that today, that it's a long road to get, especially when you're changing positions, to get to where you have to be both, you know, physically and in terms of doing all of the, I think he said there's a lot of asks when you're a tight end. And
yep.
I thought we saw him start to turn that corner last year. I'm curious, like, does he become more consistent with it in the coming season? Like, can he be someone who picks up some portion of what Cade Stover brought to this offense last year? Maybe he isn't all the way there. Maybe he, because Cade Stover had a little bit of, even with his position jumping, a little bit of a head start on some of those things in becoming what he became. But the underlying talent is clearly there with G. Scott. I think it's just a matter of, does he put that package together? Does he display that package in a consistent way? I think he's useful for the offense regardless. I think if you're trying to project, could a tight end have a sort of a breakthrough receiving season? It's just a matter of consistency for him.
Yeah, I think so. You know, especially because you talk to, you know, Keenan Bailey and you talk to all these other people. And I think it's notable that everybody says we're not replacing Cade Stover. It's hard to replace Cade Stover. You know, there's not a, oh, Marvin Harrison Jr. is gone, we're going to have to rally together as a group type of mentality. You know what I'm saying? There isn't that kind of notion with this group. It is, oh, it's a great room. We're going to all pull together. We're all going to, you know, we're all going to have to pull, you know, we're all going to have to pull in the same rope. It's that with the tight end room, and it's not with the receivers. So I think, yeah, the consistency is key. And I think opportunity could be key and the right opportunity. You know, I mean, you're talking about a situation where the team probably should be better at running the football with the running backs you have, with some offensive line improvement, maybe a little bit better scheme with Chip Kelly. You've got still talented receivers. You would hope that there's an upgraded quarterback. Like things can kind of excel around you and kind of put you in a position to succeed, I think, which would be a, you know, I think that would be really developmental for G Scott and help his development more than anything, that the offense around him kind of gets better. And, you know, when you look at an overall tight end, there's just so many things you got to do. And that would kind of take a few things off of his plate.
We're going to come back after this break and we're going to talk a couple of different topics. One is going to be what we're seeing and hearing from this young defensive tackle group, or some of them not so young, but the emerging defensive tackle group who are filling out this rotation. Then we're going to talk about a couple of third-year defensive ends and what the coming season could mean for them. You're listening to Buckeye Talk.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So when we talked to Larry Johnson, defensive line coach, on Tuesday, one of the names that he was sort of raving about was Jason Moore, and a second-year defensive tackle, a guy who early in his life would have definitely projected as an edge rusher. And Ohio State saw him very early, and we've seen Larry Johnson do this with guys sometimes later in their careers. You'll come here, you'll play defensive end for a year or two, and then he's like, all right, it's year three tech. And then you just move inside, partially because there's always these, you know, elite edge rushers typically coming in behind you. And if you're not quite to that level, it just makes more sense for everyone for you to slot inside. But he referred to Jason Moore in addition to talking about just how surprisingly good he's been this spring. And that wasn't him saying, I think he had low expectations for him. I think it was a way of indicating just how good Jason Moore has looked this spring, but described him as sort of the, like, prototypical three technique that this defense would need. And Jason Moore seems to have really embraced that. He was talking today about his size, more to the point, his length, and what that means for him, creating separation, making moves off of that. And I think that's maybe the most encouraging thing to hear, because other guys, you know, Keenan Bailey was saying this when he talked about the tight ends on Tuesday. I think he was talking about Jelani Thurman, and it's a phrase he's used before, but how there's, you know, knowing what to do, knowing how to do it, and knowing why you do it. And I think it's promising that Jason Moore seems to already be at that third stage pretty early in his career, knowing how his body type and skill set can really manifest itself with his defense.
Yeah, Jason Moore's body transformation over the last maybe a year has been remarkably impressive. I mean, you're talking about a kid who was a recruit, and he was like 6'6", 250. You know, like that is like defensive end territory, right? Like that is ideal defensive end size. He is currently listed at 6'6", 305, which is really interesting. And, you know, you mentioned the prototypical, you know, three tech, and I think it's really interesting that you're kind of going from Mike Hall to, you know, somebody who was a little bit undersized, who, you know, I think he's like 6'3", play. I think he told me at the pro day he was like 298. I don't know if he's going to stick at 298, but in the 290s, I think that would probably be where he plays at. Then you're playing with him at 290, Then you go to Jason Moore. I mean, that's a whole different beast. So yeah, the size is one thing, I think, especially over these last, you know, couple of months. You got to learn to play with that. That is something that is very true. You know, when you gain that amount of weight in that amount of time, you got to learn to carry it, and you got to learn to carry it well. So I'm curious to see how that happens. But he mentioned his arm length. I mean, when you've got that long of a wingspan and you can get guards off of you and kind of make plays in the middle and do those kind of things where you can kind of read gaps and read your keys in a manner like that, I think that that's going to be really big. So yeah, I mean, Jason, Steven and I have mentioned this time and time again on this pod and in person. Like, when we saw him in fall camp, we were like, oh my goodness, like that is what NFL players look like. And here comes this freshman walking onto the field. Jason Moore, the size is the number one thing that stands out to you. And, you know, I just think that, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what he can do with that size and how he kind of fits into this defensive tackle rotation.
I mean, it jumps at you. And it was funny listening to him talk today, because on a couple of occasions, he used the term unreal when talking about himself. And I didn't get the impression he was trying to be boastful, but he said something along the lines of and it might be because this is things he's heard Larry Johnson tell him to, like, give him the confidence that of what he can be for this defense. But saying, what'd he say? Something like, when you see a guy of my size, you don't often see a guy of my size moving the way I do. It's kind of unreal. Something along those lines. Like, it struck me as funny that somebody was talking about themselves in sort of a matter of fact way, but also in sort of a boastful way. And again, I think he just gets it. I think you could see him seeing what this could be for him, that the switch is flipped. You know, confidence was a big topic of conversation today. There were some other guys that we talked to who, whether it was Kenyatta Jackson, whether it was Hero Canoe, whether you can take it back to conversations we were having with the coaches on Tuesday, that they saw something come on at some point last year. You know, Jim Knowles was talking about for Gabe Powers earlier this spring about how in the back half of last season, like, it seemed like the second half of the year, which is, you know, I think makes sense. Like, you get through a period where maybe guys could be pressing a little bit. Kenyatta Jackson was definitely talking about that, and we'll get to that later. But like, you're pressing, you're trying to get on the field, you're trying to figure your role, you're trying to push for a bigger role. And then the second half of the year, like, you've got a lot of practice reps under you. You've hopefully gotten some of the garbage time at worst game reps in you. And that's where I think those breakthroughs happen. And I think when you hear guys like Jason Moore start to talk about themselves this way, I think as fans, you would take it as a good sign, because again, there wasn't an arrogance to it. I think it's like him being comfortable in that growing body that I think you're talking about. I think you have to like reconcile that with yourself, that like you had to do all this work sort of separate from your football skill to get your body to where it is. And then you then have to take that body and develop it and refine it in a football way. And he's one of several guys that we've heard from, even just on this defensive line over the course of this spring, who are talking in a way that like they have some clarity as to what they can do on a football field this fall to help this team, not just to play, but to like, what role can you play in a championship? I think Jason Moore is one of those guys who sees it pretty clearly right now.
Well, and you're going to need those guys, right? And we're going to get into these guys here in a second. But like, you need to keep that athleticism. You need to keep that physicality, because, you know, it's one of those things, like I said, you got to learn how to carry it. It's not only do you got to learn how to play with it, you got to learn how to carry it in your day-to-day life. You know, like, that's the thing. Like, imagine you, dear listener of Buckeye Talk, you gained 55 pounds in a, you know, 12-month span. Maybe that's probably not the best for people who are not college athletes or pro athletes, but you got to learn how to walk with that. You got to learn how to act with that. You got to learn how to do different things with that, and let alone do with a football field. So, and you got to learn like what your body needs in terms of recovery. Now it's harder on your knees when you're 55 pounds heavier than you were in high school. Like, it's a different thing that you got to do. And we've talked about this, you know, kind of needing durability. You're going to need guys on the defensive line you can't just rotate four or five throughout the year and that's it. You're going to have to go, you know, a whole hockey line change at some point on your defensive line, and then probably a little bit extra to get some guys, you know, to get some guys different looks throughout the year and get those guys developed. So to me, it's he's crucial. And I think Jason Moore, the early returns on him, you know, being a guy that you can just play 15 snaps a game or so, I think they're pretty good.
Hiro Kanu, another guy who was talking about that confidence, and his is a little bit of a different story. I'm working on something about kind of where he came from and how he got here. He, you know, starts his life in Germany. You know, that's his first language, and is you know, half Nigerian, half German, and comes to American football in sort of a different way, kind of outgrew soccer, even though he was a pretty good soccer player when he was younger. And the athleticism, that underlying athleticism, once it combined with that size, you know, if he had grown up in the States, he probably would have been pushed to American football earlier, obviously. And now it's a matter of, you know, he had a little bit more acclimation. He had a little bit more time where he had to adjust to sort of just the mindset of American football. And I was talking to him about that a little bit, that there's a physicality. It's interesting to me, like a guy like him, if he had been recruited to come over and then just end up at a lower tier Big Ten school or like a mid-major, or, you know, like a group of five, like, sorry, mid-major, I'm kind of still in my basketball bracket mindset. Group of five, like it would still would have been an adjustment, right? And then the idea of like a guy like that now having to come in and compete at the Ohio State level. He was telling a funny story that, you know, everybody has their welcome to Ohio State moment, and his came when he was going up against Josh Fryer in practice, and Fryer just like laid him out and knocked the wind out of him. And he's like laying on the ground, and he gets up and kind of looks over at Ryan Day. And Ryan Day's like, get back in there. Like, just stand up. You got another play to do. And about how that's, it's just like a game rep. Like, no matter what happens, you've got to get up on the next one. And that, I think, explains why maybe his moment was coming a little bit later, but we knew that something was always within him. And he showed by getting on the field and actually making plays last year. And that's the other, I think, part that, about this that should be encouraging for Ohio State, is that this, his is not that theoretical. It's even a little bit more theoretical still with Moore. I mean, even though he's doing good things this spring, he hasn't really had a chance yet to do it in a game. Hiro Kanu was doing it in games last year, and not just in throwaway time. Like he had a big play against Wisconsin that stands out. He was talking about like getting into games last year, and when he got his first sack, and I forgot to go back and look up exactly when that was, but that he almost surprised himself, like, oh my, that just happened. And then, but then you've done it, and now it's like, well, now why can't I just go out and do it again? Like, his is maybe the one where confidence has been the most critical, because he was probably the one who was maybe prone to the most self-doubt, just not having come from the conventional football background.
Well, yeah, I mean, not having come from a conventional football background is really interesting. Like, those stories are always fascinating to me. You know, I talked with Nick McLarty, the punter who Ohio State has committed. Like, it's just really interesting to hear, like, you know, their stories. And like, I know here he was talking about like his first love was soccer, you know, and how he was like, you know, trying to play soccer, and, you know, how he could, I think, what do you say? Goalie, I think was the thing that, you know, people were trying to get him to play, which, yeah. By the way, Hiro Kanu, like, you look, I talked to him for the first time today, kind of off to the side. We were all kind of sitting around, and, you know, I asked him like what the best German food in Columbus was. We were just kind of like shooting the breeze a little bit. And I was looking at him and I was like, this is just a large human being, because, and then I went back and I was listening back to some of it, and I saw the goalie stuff. I was like, that's crazy. That's crazy that was once a past option for him. But yeah, I mean, this is another guy I think just absolutely crucial to Ohio State's kind of front in terms of where do you go if something goes awry. And I mean, it's football. Spots have a tend to open up, whether that's play, whether that's injury, whether that's we just want a different look. Like, there's going to be an opportunity there. And I thought he flashed. I remember he had a really good drive, I think it was against Wisconsin last year, where he had a really good drive and he had like a really nice tackle for loss. And there were flashes of Hiro Kanu where you're like, okay, okay, let's see what he's got. And I think that getting him in there as kind of that third guy in, like if he can be a three or a four for you, I think you're feeling great about where your defensive tackle is or your defensive tackle depth is, considering how well Tyleik Williams played last year and what you think you can get out of Ty Hamilton.
Yeah, with this defensive rotation, we'll get to Cade McDonald in a second, but he fits into this too. I mean, you've got two guys up front who could be in the NFL right now, and Tyleik Williams and Ty Hamilton. And then you've got these three guys behind them who all have their best football ahead of them, but who all, and I don't think we're, I mean, again, this is just the way that other people on this team are talking about them and the coaches are talking about them. All seem to be on the verge of taking that step themselves to where they are playing their best football. And some of these guys, again, as it relates to the way you've talked about the defensive ends, I mean, if more defensive tackles had left, if Ty Hamilton said, you know, hey, 4 years, I had a good 4 years, 4 years is enough, I'm moving on. You know, we'd be talking about these guys in a different light because it would be more about, well, which one of these guys is going to step up and take a lead role, a starting role. But as it is now, the imagining these three guys sort of cycling in behind those two established guys is, it sort of epitomizes why people are so optimistic about what this defense can do, because it's not just the frontline guys who came back from the NFL. It's the guys stacked up behind them, and that you're, an opposing team is not going to get a whole lot of a break as it works deeper into games and deeper into these rotations. Like, you can just imagine, like, Jason Moore sitting on the sideline, and he is probably not as good of a 60 down player as Tyleik Williams is, but he might be better for those 15 other snaps that he plays than Tyleik Williams would be if he were to play 61 through 75. You know what I mean? Like, there's he gets to harness something and come in and just unload it on people. Let's talk about Cade McDonald, too, because he's another guy that Larry Johnson was speaking very highly of, and another guy who was sort of asked today, are you surprised that this seems to be accelerating? Like, you seem to really be turning heads, and, I mean, his point was no. Like, he worked really hard for this, and that it has come kind of naturally. Like, this is what's supposed to happen as a result of what he's put into this. But he also described himself as a run stopper. And he was talking about how important it's been to add Brandon Jordan, who came over as sort of a pass rush specialist, assistant defensive line coach, if you will, and has had a long background in that at the college and NFL level, and how much that is making him a better all-around defensive tackle. But at the same time, again, another guy who knows his identity and is, I think, locked in on what he can be for this defense, and saying something along the lines of, I live by stopping the run. It's why I came here. And when you start to see, again, where each of these guys can fit into this defense for 2024, like for 2025, they want Cade McDonald to take another step. And because he'll have to be, he'll be pushing for a starting role that year. But for this year to come to think that, oh, well, we really need, it's time to get Ty Hamilton out of the game. We want to get somebody in there to stuff the run on this series against whoever we're playing. There you go. Like, he can go in and he has that mindset already that he wants to emphasize when he gets into a game, that he is a game changer in that respect.
Yeah, losing Mike Hall is a big deal. And because I think that what he gave you was a little bit different of a dynamic, obviously, than Tyleik. And Caden, the thing that I keep coming back to is, here, I'll put it like this. In recruiting, one of the things that you always got to do, and, you know, Steven mentioned this to me when I was first coming on, and a lot of other people have mentioned this, follow maybe the visits more than you follow what they say. Because a player could tell you that they love a certain school and that they love certain whatever, and that things are going great. But if they're not visiting that school, then do they really love Ohio? Like, if a player tells me that he loves Ohio State, you know, high school junior, he loves Ohio State, But I haven't made it out there yet. Eventually, you're going to start to think, all right, what's going on? Well, I'm kind of the inverse here with Caden McDonald, because Ryan Day has mentioned him as, like, just, I believe, just kind of off the cuff. Like, I think he got asked about the defensive tackles, and Caden McDonald was immediate. And then Larry Johnson got asked, who's your third? You're in, on the interior behind Hamilton and Williams. And Caden McDonald was the first name that he said. And I'm starting to get that itch where I'm like, okay, wait a minute here. All these people are saying Caden McDonald's name. And we've got players saying Caden McDonald's name. And Tyleek Williams said, he's like mini me. And I think they're the same height and like 1 pound of difference. I think Tyleek is 1 pound heavier, but, or at least he was when we talked to Tyleek. Like, this is a thing. And I think it's important to note, because it's what people are saying about Caden McDonald. We're obviously not watching a ton of this, you know, in kind of behind the scenes and everything like that. But what people are saying about Caden McDonald has really kind of raised my eyes over the last, you know, couple of weeks, maybe, you know, since spring practice has started, and what people think he can be. I mean, you're talking about a guy who sounds like he's pushing to be in the rotation or kind of in the mix at defensive tackle. Like, you're sounding like this could be a guy who he could see some genuine time, like with Tyleek Williams and Jack Sawyer and JT Tumalo, the way that they're speaking about him. That has really kind of raised my eyebrows.
Yeah, I feel like Moore is the one who has taken the biggest jump, but McDonald might be the one who's putting himself in the best position to be the three, be that third guy.
That's a good way to put it.
They're going to have some versatility to they like guys who can play both ways, but you also start to see where you could have some conventional roles for these guys, certainly by the time we get to 2025. That maybe Moore is the starting three tech and McDonald is the starting nose or something along those lines. But there's some interchangeability there, as there always is with Larry Johnson's fronts. And then I'm also intrigued by what they do if they really do start to implement this five-man look with the old double eagle, as Jim Knowles was talking earlier in camp. And do you then go with, like, three bigger dudes on the field at that point? So you could roll Hamilton, McDonald, and Canoe across in those three spots and make it a true, like, wall up there trying to stuff the run just against certain packages, certain looks. Like, they've got a lot of versatility, and this is a position that, with all the attention that, you know, offensive line to some extent, but quarterbacks, linebackers, like, there were some positions where the top line still had a lot of questions. Defensive line depth was also a thing that was sort of hanging out there, but it's being answered, it sounds like, by just the reports that we're hearing. And like you said, maybe we'll see more on Saturday. Get the text, by the way. If you haven't signed up for the text, now is a great time to sign up for the text and get the 2-week free trial, because I think if you do it by today, if it doesn't take you through the spring game on April 13th, it comes close. So sign up Saturday morning. Sign up Saturday morning for the 2-week free trial, because I think that will almost get you there to April 13th, if not all the way through it. 614-350-3315. What we see and hear around the Woody on Saturday during Student Appreciation Day, what we're, you know, how we're analyzing that based on the other things we've seen and heard this spring, we'll be texting that out first sometime midday Saturday from your buddies here at Cleveland.com. One more segment after we come back from break. We're going to talk a little bit about the third-year defensive ends, how they're approaching this year. You're listening to Buckeye Talk. So I talked to Larry Johnson a little bit on the side on Tuesday, because he said something during, when he was at the podium, at the table, about Caden Curry and Kenyatta Jackson, and just sort of like in passing was like, you know, hey, these guys could have gone in the portal, but they stuck around and you know, wanted to be a part of this team. And they don't usually like bring that up on their own. Like, hey, you know, he could have transferred. And it just... now it's becoming a little bit more commonplace. Coaches probably will just sort of talk about that in a general way. And in this case, it didn't sound like it was a specific, I almost said threat. Threat's not the word I want to use. It didn't sound like it was an imminent move that either of these guys were going to make, or maybe even a conversation that was happening. But Larry Johnson wanted to sort of preempt that, go to them and sort of talk through the role that they could have this year. And in both Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry were repeating some of the things that Larry Johnson was saying on Tuesday. I think Caden Curry actually used the term chasing greatness, and that he thought Larry Johnson was the coach that would help him do that the best. Kenyatta Jackson said that for him, the mindset change had to come even earlier. It was during last season, where early in the year, he was maybe a little bit in his own head, maybe overthinking things a little bit. There were obviously a lot of expectations on him. And then he looked really good last spring and had us all thinking like, oh, maybe this is going to be the breakthrough. I think on the podcast, when we were picking leaders for the season last year, Doug picked him to lead the team in sacks. And that's not obviously how that turned out. Like it ended up just being a lot of snaps for Sawyer and Tua Maloau really leading that group. So it led to natural questions about how do you then approach that as a third year guy? And, you know, they're both here this spring, which indicates that they have accepted if things go according to plan for Ohio State, they're not going to play as much as they're talking about this 25-30 snap thing for the second string defensive line. If Tua Maloau and Sawyer play a full season as Ohio State hopes, then these two guys will play less. But it kind of goes back to what we were just talking about with these defensive interior guys. I don't think that means that the impact, I think it means the impact can still be there. And in fact, it's just a matter of where mindset becomes important, because if you're locked in, you can make the most of those 15 snaps, especially when you're someone who can come in and specialize from a pass rush perspective, the way we think Kenyatta Jackson could.
Yeah, Kenyatta Jackson was a top 60 recruit when he came out of high school in the class of 2022, and Caden Curry was top 125. Those are dudes that could play elsewhere, like right now. You know, think about how many schools that Caden Curry and Kenyatta Jackson could play at. Forget if, like, let's just put it aside right now, like how many schools it would be better for their development or, you know, better for their long term. Like, a lot of schools these guys could play at. They're third year players. I know recruiting rankings do kind of matter less as you're kind of more into your college career. I mean, who cares what you were as a 16 or a 17 year old when you're 21 years old? But I do think that is indicative of their talent. And, you know, I think it's big for Ohio State that they kept him around, because think about where this depth chart would be right now and what we would be saying about the defensive ends if one or both of them were not here. And think about what this 2025 defensive end unit would look like if Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry were not going to be around. I mean, then you're like, okay, can Edric Houston do this? Because, I mean, then how do we feel about Dominic Hurks? Maybe you'd be stretching it, and you'd probably be looking at the portal, and that's not a place you want to live in. So with these guys going into this year, I mean, they're going to have, I think, a bigger role than people think, because Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau, you kind of just need them for the big games, right? You kind of just need them to play in moments where the time calls for it. You don't need to see him in the first couple of games of the year when you're playing Akron and Marshall and Western Michigan. And you probably don't need to see him a lot when you're playing, you know, Northwestern in mid-November, right? Like, there are just going to be games that I think those guys, you're not going to have to rely on them 60 snaps, nor should you. And that's where Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry come in. And I think as a 1-2 punch, you can really get some good development and really feel good about where you're headed going into the 2025 season. But then more importantly, you can feel good about what you've got behind Jack and JT in 2024, because if one of those guys goes down, you're going to need somebody to step up. And I think you look at Kenyatta Jackson and you see the athleticism, you know, and you see just kind of you see him and what he could be. Like, I get where people were coming from, because when I showed up on the beat, everybody was talking about Kenyatta Jackson breakout, Kenyatta Jackson breakout. They're really going to throw him in there, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Kenyatta Jackson, the talent's there. And if you can get a really solid third pass rusher where you can spell JT and Jack, keep them fresh, you're keeping Kenyatta fresh, like, man, this pass rush can be really, really good with that 1-2 punch of Jack and JT, and then right off of that is Kenyatta and Caden. So big that they're still around, big that Ohio State was able to keep them around, and I think probably better for their futures that they're still around, although, you know, you never know what a situation is, but they could be playing a lot of different places. I think that is very true. I think sometimes you, like, to your point earlier, Nathan, coaches will tell you something and they'll say, oh, you know, you kind of roll your eyes, you kind of shrug. I think that's 100% true. Like, they could have entered the portal and they could have been playing elsewhere, and they're not.
I just think championship teams, when you get to the postseason and you're watching those games happen, and they're talking about guys as they cycle into games, it's not like, you know, they don't just have backups. Like, they have the guys who should be on the field. They have guys who are blocked and and we've seen that in Ohio State history, whether that's receivers, running backs, at times quarterbacks. Like, there's, you know, the next guy is there. You know, in 2021, or 2020, I should say, 2020, Justin Fields is doing all the things he's doing, and C.J. Stroud is kind of an afterthought. Like, he technically was the backup, but he's coming in, he's handing the ball off. He's, even in the playoff games when he got forced in, he's coming in, just handing the ball off. It's C.J. Stroud. That's a guy who, then look what he did the next 2 years. Look what he just did in the NFL. And that's where Ohio State's defense has been building back towards, but it hasn't been there in a while. You can go back to 2019 and see some indications of that, where how deep they were at defensive tackle with veteran guys that year, how deep they were at defensive end, even with guys who were, even if they didn't go on to be NFL players in some cases, were certainly solid college players, had some depth in the secondary to play with. And then even a year later, you saw how much started to kind of dwindle from that. And then by the time you got to 21, it had really taken the turn the other way. And now it's almost like to an overkill extent. They're just so deep at so many places. But I think for both Jackson and Curry, if you look at where this, what role they could play, I still think it's just there's reasons to think that it could be a pretty high impact. And I think that was probably an easy sell for Larry Johnson. He was talking on Tuesday about how it's sort of a culture within the whole room. He thought that, he said something about how great the parents are, that, you know, they had their concerns and maybe they'll make a decision you don't like, but at least they'll listen to you and you can talk through things with them, and a very like copacetic relationship. And that seemed to really show up a lot with Kenyatta and Caden Curry. And Jackson was asked, like, you know, how much did you consider the portal? And he sort of dismissed it. Because, again, a guy who's not from Ohio, you're looking at another year. And third year is often sort of like the potential, like, blossoming year. Like, I mentioned it on Tuesday, but the old Urban Meyer adage of it's 2 years for you, and then or 2 years on coaches, and then third year's on the player. And that's can be a year where things really open up for guys and you're coming into your own. And that he may not get the opportunity to display that in terms of the number of snaps he plays. I think it's a matter of continuing the development, continuing to, put the battle in, especially this time of year, to make the most of those like 15 or 20 snaps. Because we've seen instances where, whether that was, you know, some things that guys like Ty Hamilton were doing, guys like Tyleek Williams were coming in and doing as second level guys in the first couple years of their career, and what that eventually meant, what someone like Zach Harrison was doing a couple years ago when he was just like a freshman or sophomore. You could see the flashes of it. It didn't have to be 30 plays a game. You could come in and do it in a more specialized way. And especially with this defense, it just sort of, it feeds into how where that relentlessness is going to be there at really all three levels potentially.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the championship quality, right? Like, you see certain teams maybe get into trouble with this. Like, this happens a lot, I think, with, you know, your Cincinnati's and your TCU's and you know like the teams that make it and you're like, "Hey, good for you." And then all of a sudden one guy goes down, and on trots a true sophomore who's the 580th ranked recruit in the country, and he hasn't really played a lot, and uh-oh. Like, Ohio State can change it up, and when you get into these big-time games, they're going to play a good team, and they're going to give up something, right? Like, let's say you're playing Georgia in a college football playoff game, and then all of a sudden you give up a 12-play drive or whatever, and then you turn the ball over on your second play, and defense has got to go back out there. You feel pretty confident in, you know what, if we got to give guys a breather, there might be a little bit of a drop off, but not a significant one where we're mortified to put in other guys on the bench. And that is exactly where Caden and Kenyatta can come in. I think, you know, you see this in the NCAA tournament, to bring up the tournament. I mean, we're in March. You see the mid majors, they get to the games, and all of a sudden they're running a 7-man rotation because they're mortified of their 8th and 9th and 10th guys hitting the floor. Where in college football, you feel good about that when you have Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry. When you've got the 60th overall recruit from a few years ago, who's really talented, who's really athletic, who would be starting in a lot of different places coming off the bench, you're feeling good about not changing things up or having to hide those guys when they do have to hit the field, because they will eventually have to play.
Anything else you want to add from what we've heard this week going into Saturday?
No, I'm trying to think. I know Steven told me the other day that this is going to be one of the better looks that we're going to get of Ohio State kind of throughout spring and fall camp, just in terms of like what we're going to see. So I'm curious to see kind of what, you know, package groups look like at the positions that we're talking about. I mean, like tight end specifically, like what does that look like? Is it, I mean, I don't anticipate them running a lot of two tight end sets. I just don't think that that's part of this offense's DNA for very long. You know, I just don't think you're going to be doing that a lot when you've got the running backs that you do, when you got the receivers that you do. But what does that look like? Where does Will Kaczmarek play? Do you feel confident putting maybe G. Scott in the slot? Like, there's just different things that are going to happen on Saturday that I think can be really really illuminating for what you've got at tight end and what you've got on the defensive line.
I don't know how much they're going to show us.
I am
in terms
curious
of formations,
that, yeah.
In terms of like, I think it could be pretty vanilla on Saturday. It is, after all, sort of just another practice. In fact, it's not just another practice. It's a practice where they know hundreds of people are going to be in there watching them and sharing everything they see. So there may be some competitive periods. I just don't know how much they'll show us things. And the more they show us something, the less likely it is that they would use it. It's almost something that they want to just be out there that other teams are aware of. So it's interesting, like, because Day loves playing two tight end sets. So are they really going to pull back on that this year? And if so, is it because they're trying to get a second running back on the field? Would they consider 22 personnel where you got two tight ends and two running backs, and what that means for the offense as a whole? And it's, again, those are all just little wrinkles. It's going to be the exception to the rule, because they're going to be, you know, their usual offense by and large. But like, how many of those wrinkles would they really show us? I don't know. And especially because, you know, when I covered another college football team, we got to see every practice. Like, we watched practice from beginning to end. On Tuesdays and Wednesdays during the season, we saw every practice of spring camp and preseason camp. And at the same time, you had sort of a tacit understanding, or really it was more of a formal understanding, that you weren't going to report on formations, mm-hmm. trick plays, things like that. That's sort of the NFL model, right? That you don't really get into some of those things. And Ohio State doesn't really have a formal policy along those lines, because we see so little of practice, and they show us, they make sure they know what periods we're going to be in there for, and they don't do those things in those periods. So I think that Saturday could be a little bit more vanilla. But I think what will be interesting Saturday is getting a sense of who is playing where, getting a sense at a couple positions, like what is the linebacker hierarchy right now as we're halfway through spring camp. Maybe some things as far as like secondary depth, safety depth, what are they looking at some positions there. Offensive line will obviously be an interesting thing to watch. I was asking Kenyatta Jackson today, you know, hey, last year it was pretty clear who had the edge in the spring. How's that working out this spring? And he said, well, the offensive line's actually adjusting a little bit right now because Chip Kelly's got some new plays and some things he's trying to do, but that it is more evenly matched. Like there's more good play on both sides, which I think should also be exciting for fans to hear, that the defensive line feels like it's getting a better, tougher look from that offensive line. So we'll find out. We'll see what we see on Saturday. It will be refreshing. The first time we've seen anything since the first week of the spring. So it'll be enlightening just from that regard. Again, get the text 614-350-3315. And after we're done with the Woody that day, we'll be coming home to get back to you with another episode of Buckeye Talk. So for Andrew Gillis and for the currently absent Stephen Means, who may be there on Saturday, I'm Nathan Baird. That was Buckeye Talk.